Former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who helped ignite President Trump's battle with the NFL over the national anthem, has returned to the public square with a new ad campaign from Nike.
If people say your dreams are crazy, if they laugh at what you think you can do, good. Because calling a dream crazy is not an insult. It's a compliment. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. So don't ask if your dreams are crazy. Ask if they're crazy enough.
Eric Zion is the CEO at Zion and Zion, a Phoenix ad agency that has an in-house market research team. The team conducted a survey of more than 700 current Nike customers who were aware of the ad featuring Kaepernick and found that 25% plan to boycott Nike's products. Zion says the decision to run this ad was a particularly risky move for Nike from a business perspective.
Because the first round, if we call it Kaepernick round one, you know, Kaepernick lost, the NFL lost. They lost market share and significant revenue. So it makes it particularly interesting, in spite of seeing that happen, that Nike went this direction.
Something that Zion says surprised his team was the 25% figure, which is huge when you're talking about the effect of a customer boycott on the brand's bottom line. But Zion says they thought that number would drop significantly if they just looked at millennials. But that's not what happened. 18.6% of millennials said they'll also boycott Nike.
So it's really interesting that while people tend to view this, you know, quote, millennial demographic as one homogenous unit, people forget that even within that, there are plenty of independents and Republicans.
Now, you might be thinking it can't be all bad for Nike. Since the ad and the ensuing debate, Nike has enjoyed a nice sales bump from the publicity, but Zion predicts the negative impressions will outlast the positive bump.
Think about it. You see something in an ad and you go, yeah, I totally support that. And then a few weeks later, you know, it fades from your memory. Now, in contrast, you see something in an ad and you get violently angry and you think it's an affront to not only you, but your relatives who've served and sacrificed, etc. Does that fade away in a week or two?
Zion and Zion found the groups with higher numbers of customers who said they'll boycott Nike were Republicans and those with a family member currently or previously in law enforcement or in the military. Regardless of how the campaign ultimately affects Nike's bottom line, the company has entered into a true partnership with Kaepernick and has provided him a greater platform for his activism and social justice work. With me to talk more about that is Victoria Jackson, sports historian and lecturer of history at ASU. She's also a former college and pro athlete. Victoria, what does this partnership tell you about Nike and about Colin Kaepernick, that he's reentering the public sphere in this way?
I'm glad you asked that question in that way, looking at this as a endorsement deal between two parties. I think a lot of people have been focusing on the Nike side and the motivation behind the Nike side without really thinking about the athlete side. And that's what this was. You know, not only did Nike, I'm sure, do its homework to figure out whether or not this was a good strategy moving forward, Colin Kaepernick was thinking about whether or not he wanted to align with, you know, one of the world's largest companies as well. And so I think they both chose to try something new and innovative, and that is a contract that has social justice built into the contract, which is new in these endorsement deals.
You mentioned the branding. I'll call it risk. It doesn't have to be risk, but the branding risk that a big company like Nike takes. But it's a branding risk for Colin Kaepernick as well, because he has worked very hard to be seen as a social justice warrior, not just a professional athlete. How important do you think that is to this element, the fact that he is not just an equal partner, but the message he is sending is bigger than sports?
I've never heard of a contract having the athletic company donate directly to the athlete's individual causes. And so in this contract, at least from what the New York Times has reported, we don't know officially, is that Nike is donating directly to Colin Kaepernick's Know Your Rights camps, which are, you know, they hark back to the Black Panthers' youth and community programs focused on educational pathways, training for young people, training young people about how to act when they interact with law enforcement, and messages and tools for self-empowerment. And so that is part of this deal is important and has been, I think, forgotten to a certain extent because of the shiny ad campaign that was released alongside of all of this.
Do you think this kind of thing reflects disappointingly in any way on, when I was growing up, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, where you have people who clearly could have had the bully pulpit if they wanted to, because these were two of the most admired athletes in the world, at least for their on-field, on-course accomplishments. Does it show that LeBron, for example, or Colin Kaepernick are more committed to those causes, or have our times changed where we're expecting more of that from our athletes?
I think it's a shift in the times, and I think we have to be careful not to be critical of athletes who don't choose to align themselves with Colin Kaepernick and Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman and LeBron James and Serena Williams and Megan Rapinoe, right? It has to be authentic. It has to come from a place of authenticity. I should say, since I'm a historian, right, the athlete endorsement is a relatively new phenomenon. It hasn't been around all that long.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michael Jordan really did set the tone for all of this, set the standard for all of this. And when you have people working in this industry who use Jordan as the model, you have lots of well-intentioned people around in the circles of athletes advising them what to do and not to do. And I think for a long time we had agents telling athletes, listen, you can do that stuff, but do it after you retire. Get your money now, and then you can put that money into what you want to do in retirement. Hence the flourishing of all these individual athlete charitable foundations, often after those athletes retire. And, you know, it is a full-time job to be the best in the world at what you do in your sport. And it's exhausting too, right? Like you're working very hard when you're the best of the best in your sport. And so it's to take this on as well is exhausting. I mean, look at Billie Jean King. She is the athlete who exemplified somebody who chose to take this all on in the prime of her athletic career. And she, I mean, talk about an incredible, exceptional human. And she was also exhausted. So
I have to ask the inevitable question, fans, because fans take things very personally. How many times have we heard, stick to the game, this is my toy store, stop making me listen to what's important in society? Is there going to be a backlash? And is that backlash worth it because it's going to lead to something better?
Sports don't exist in a vacuum. They never have. Mm-hmm. Modern sporting forms were established with a specific political purpose in mind, you know, with implications off the field of play. And when you interpret athletes as bringing their politics to sport, it's not that they're inventing this idea. They're bringing different politics to the politics that already existed within that sporting space.
Okay.
And I think race right now, for people who don't buy that, race is kind of a hard way to see it, but gender is a lot easier to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so for somebody who, you know, I'm a woman, I was a professional athlete, like I understand that going out for a run in a sports bra is a feminist act because I used to get yelled at for doing that when I was a kid, you know. And when we see sport itself as reflective of the politics of the society in which it exists, it's a lot easier to see that this is just a point of conflict, that there's politics in this space, that athletes are bringing different politics to the space, and that politics might be that they're trying to make it more inclusive on the field of play and then make the society in which they exist also more inclusive and with freedoms for all people.
Victoria Jackson is a sports historian and lecturer of history at ASU.